Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstkeeclinic.com.
We're back here on the KNC Masterpiece, and Kevin, tonight, right here at the station, FC Dallas is going to be joining us. Dan Hunt.
Whoa!
We're going to have Luchi Gonzalez, Reggie Cannon, and Paxton Pomacall, and we'll do a Q&A, and then you get to do a meet and greet with them afterwards. Go to 105throughthefan.com/contests and register right now. Was it worth it for you to watch and pay for the fight? But Kevin, before we get into that, I did want to bring up something that went on the nosebleed seats on Friday. Barry Church hopped on, and Barry Church was asked a little bit about Dez Bryant. He was asked a little bit about Dak and Romo. And
that's what I'm here for.
This is the question. This is the answer, because Barry Church experienced it, man. He's been around it. What's the difference between Dak and Romo in commanding a room?
That's the biggest difference, just the command of the room. Like, you know, Romo came in there, and he had all the veteran guys, you know, on him, you know, saying basically, we follow you, Romo. But, you know, the younger guys were kind of unsure about that. When Dak came in, he was a young guy who had the younger guys on, you know, on his side already. But he also was a guy that can relate to the veterans. And the veterans saw, like myself, saw how much he works and how hard he wants to be great in his game. And he was able to go out there and prove it. He was able to go out there and win. I mean, that 2016 year, we went 13-3 that year. I mean, and it was a lot to do with his arm, a lot to do with Ezekiel Elliott running the ball as well. But this guy's leadership, and he's able to command that offense. I mean, it was – it was remarkable to see, and I just don't think the Cowboys need to lose that guy.
You've heard a lot of guys that play with him also say that whenever Dak started, he was the same guy he was in the back of the room as he is now in the front of the room. And that you could always tell, even if he wasn't the starter for this team, that he had a personality that players just gravitated towards.
So I love this audio because it just gives us insight as a Cowboys fan of at least how one of the players felt about Romo and Dak, and why the majority of the room really wanted Dak to stay as the quarterback in 2016 after losing the first game to the Giants, and then they couldn't lose pretty much anymore the rest of the season. Is they just love the way that he controlled the team and was the leader, and yeah, it's kind of a shot at Tony Romo, but I wonder this, and I know I'm going into way the future, and maybe I'm going too fast forward in this conversation here, but stay with me. Barry Church came in 2010. Romo had already been the starting quarterback for approximately 4 years at that point.
Okay.
So he had already started making more money than most of the young guys on the team, and as Barry Church's career progressed with the Dallas Cowboys, Tony Romo became a very high-paid quarterback. I wonder this. Right now, Dak Prescott, for his first 4 years, has been making what the young guys and nobodies make. He's been making the same salary. When the paychecks are opened, you know, and maybe they're not opened anymore. Maybe it's all direct deposit.
Yeah.
You still get the paycheck, though. You still should get the stub. Is when he starts getting checks every week of $3 million, $2 million per game. His game check is going to be approximately $2 million per game. Will he still be able to hold the attention of the young guys that were just drafted making a paycheck of $100,000 a game? Because I just wonder, when did Romo become too high class for the whole room?
I think if you stay in the room, because that's the other thing we've heard about Romo, is he didn't stay in the room.
Right.
Is he like he left?
Right.
And kind of acted like maybe he was above it all.
Right.
And sorry, like, you don't have to like that or not. That's just the way it is. So if Dak stays in the room, I don't necessarily think it has to be just about the paycheck, because the other thing I'll tell you is this. Can't you serve as an example to encourage the people about how to get paid? You know, like, we always talk with our weekend host. By the way, if you're not listening to The Fan on the weekend, I know what you're doing, because The Fan on the weekend is so much better than what's up against it. It's astonishing. But We came from the weekend. So anybody who's on the weekend, they're like, man, I want to get where y'all are. I'm like, you can.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what we did.
Except
so
now we're in the way.
Yeah. What's that?
Now we're in the way, though.
Okay. Well,
that's when you stop anywhere. Telling them how to do
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah. No, you tell them wrong things.
You tell them exactly how to not do
no,
it.
No, I do not want to be other stations in the market. So what I would say is I think Dak can look at those people and be like, if you want to get paid, this is how you're going
to
do it.
So there was a, you know, when Dak kind of...
Or he says, here's how not how to do it, because I seem to not be able to get paid.
Here's how Dak, though, he had taken the team over, right?
Uh-huh.
And then Romo saw what was happening. And then late in the season, Romo was like, I got to throw a party. I got to invite the entire team over so I can throw a party so that I can get everybody back on my side. He'd already lost them by then, though.
Yeah.
And because you're right, Kevin, he was never in the room and he wasn't that guy. He was hanging out with Jerry. You know, he was gambling with Jerry and, you know, competing with Jerry. We hear those stories from Jerry all the time about, well, Romo, you know, is so competitive that this. But his level was, and like you said, he didn't come in and have to be a leader immediately because he was surrounded by guys that already had that job. So he was able to just be like, I'm the quarterback, I'm doing my thing, all our guys are going to do that. But then whenever it was time, he started getting the blame, and it was like, hold on, do I deserve this blame for throwing that interception late in the game? What about all the rest of our leadership? Well, you're now part of that. And so Dak is going to need to be part of that leadership, yeah. And he will. I don't think he's going to leave it because he understands all those other things that it takes. I don't think he'll be out of it because I think other people will continue to follow okay. him, Mike. So that's yeah. the way I see it.
And that's the hope, and I think to your question on how do you get paid, you got to become part of kind of the Jones family. And I'm not becoming part of the Jones family. And that's why I'm not getting the quick big time salary bump that like Tony Romo got. So that's the tough thing for Dak is right. Is that he's going to have to stay in that room. And yet it seems like the friendlier you are with the Jones family, the easier you can get the big contract that you need and want.
What a disaster that is, but doesn't that speak volumes about why this team continually sits where it sits? Is yeah. It shouldn't be, and I mean, like, welcome to the world. I know I need to be an adult here, but it shouldn't be about how you can politic or play the game. It should, like, actually be about how you can literally play the football game, yeah. not the political game in terms of who's getting paid and who's not, but here we are.
It does make me feel good about Dak leading this team in the future. Just because he has those traits that stats won't say. And I know there's a zillion stats, but still, it's humans playing, and we all have strengths and weaknesses that cannot be put on an analytic board. As much as the analytic people want everything on an analytic board, they can't because humans make mistakes, and then they do extraordinary things that come out of nowhere that a computer spreadsheet can't do. And that's the one thing about where I look at all the extra stats we have now, and they can mean something, except that human is going to do something that we've never seen them do before out of nowhere in this big situation. And it could be a positive to help you win a game that you could never put on a piece of paper and can never keep it on a piece of paper. Or they do something totally stupid where you're like, son of a gun, that piece of paper now goes out the window because we don't know exactly what they're going to do in these situations. We can only put percentages on them. And that's what makes it tough to just say, let's pay them based off of stats and not pay them based off of leadership qualities or these extra things that it seems like when you talk to people that have been on Dak's team for the Cowboys will tell you he has those extra things that maybe Tony Romo didn't have.
And that's from the 972. Y'all drive me crazy when y'all call Dak a leader. Not us calling Dak a leader.
His
We're telling you
coaches,
his teammates,
owner.
His former teammates, everyone else calls yeah. him a leader.
Stephen Jones.
If you think all the people in the room are wrong, I don't know. I'm not in the room. I'm inclined to just go with those people. And those are the same people that are like, it's different than it was with Romo.
The team did follow him to an 8-8 record last year, though, Kevin.
That's
so
problematic.
There's
no question that's problematic.
NFL.com has the top 101 free agents listed right now.
Are we getting all of them?
Dak is number one, Chris Jones is number two, and Amari Cooper is number three. That's how...
You'd rather have Chris Jones than Amari, right?
I would. actually. And Jadeveon Clowney's number four. So,
are you saying that because of the draft? Because I think just Corey, sometimes on the air, but then also off the air, you have a couple of wide receivers you really like at 17. So, you would rather, you think it's easier to replace Amari Cooper draft wise
than to find
the next Chris Jones in the draft.
It's just that position at that young age, you still have to build strength. This guy's already ready to go. If you're committed to this year, then you need to invest there for my purposes. And I think that's also part of the future, too. Plus, man, the ability to swat the ball from that position where he is, those long arms, it's something that's he's a difference maker for a team. I love Dak. I want him to get his money. Everybody should get paid what they think is just for them. That's the way that the world runs around. And I think it's going to take time, and it's going to get there eventually. Kevin, there is a little bit of a breaking news rumor right now.
Did the building go down?
Not the building.
It hasn't even moved. It hasn't even budged.
I think it's gotten taller.
Are they redoing it?
I think they are actually at lunch right now, so I'm not really sure what's going on.
Well, they have worked super hard this morning, so.
There is currently no movement. Maybe they are preparing their sticks of dynamite to throw into the doors.
We'll see.
But
they're changing their strategy.
Shippy has tweeted this. Kevin Kurtz, NHL, says the Dallas Stars are pushing hard for Joe Thornton.
And, oh, my God, really?
Joe would be willing to go to Dallas. Also hearing the Florida Panthers are interested, but that might be a harder sell for
How
Thornton.
Old is Joe Thornton? Like, I remember.
Let's see.
He's got to be like 40 or something. I mean, there was distinctly a time. Like
he's 40.
Okay, maybe back when he was with the Bruins or whatever, where I thought he was like legit the best player in the game, or like certainly one of the best players in the game. What does he bring to the table in 2020?
Yeah, so this season he hasn't been as productive as you're used to seeing, although he has 4 goals and 23 assists. He's always been a really, really good passer, and I think that in addition to the leadership that he could bring the Stars for a Stanley Cup playoff run, I think his ability to win faceoffs, and you know, he might be able to help the power play out as well. He's real good behind the net. Really just anywhere around the net. He's a really great passer. And I think the reason that he would obviously come back here is that would be him reuniting with Joe Pavelski, who he spent so much time with on the San Jose Sharks. The Sharks are selling all their players. Earlier today, they traded Patrick Marleau to the Penguins. So
they're awful.
They're horrible. And, like, why not? You know, why not let these guys go chase rings? So
he's been there for, what, like 14 years? Something crazy.
Yeah, he's been in San Jose for a very long time. And I saw a article earlier that said that the San Jose Sharks would be open to bringing them back. But they sort obviously want to respect their ability to try to go get a cup. So I think that would be a really exciting, you know, addition for the Stars. You're not going to see them probably on those top two lines, but the way that the Dallas Stars have been playing lately, aside from the Blues game, they roll those four lines out, you know, pretty equally. So I would definitely be intrigued. And it's not a very he signed a 1-year, $2 million contract this season with the San Jose Sharks. And the Stars are definitely strapped for salary cap space, so that helps them out tremendously.
Here's my fun Joe Thornton fact for you of the day. He was the number one pick overall in the 1997 NHL draft.
Golly.
Wow.
Along with Tim Duncan.
How many people listening right now weren't even born in 1997?
And I was 7.
The player that we might be about
I was
to
7
get.
Years old.
That is impressive.
His beard game's on point.
By the way,
yes, the beards are important for the playoffs.
The crane has lifted the wrecking ball back into the sky.
All right.
And they are currently raising and dropping it to knock the little like ledge area off. So we'll have more news.
PNC Masterpiece back here on
Crane Talk.
Coming up next on Crane and Jim Crane Talk, Mark Cuban is complaining again because the Mavs don't know how to close out. Let's discuss next right here on The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan, and it didn't go exactly the way the Mavericks wanted it to on Saturday against Atlanta. And I think, as Mike Bassett continues to point out, Mark Cuban wants the entire NBA to shut down for just a few minutes so that the Mavericks can go back and play 9 seconds after a tip-off.
Good.
In Atlanta.
Good.
Flight. I don't think it's going to be worth it, but I think
with our tallest guy being 6'7" at this point, because Maxi Kleba has fouled out. Porzingis was considered out for the game, and I don't think you can dress him out for the last however many seconds. I don't know. It's one of these things. I get it. You should protest because it was a horrible decision on instant replay. Yet it was also John Collins was going to put the ball back in very easily for a basket.
This is let's go start with 12 and then go through it here, Shippy. Mark Cuban. This is on what happened with the whistle.
One of the players. It was an inadvertent whistle that came after the putback, but everybody who said they were watching it said it came before the putback. That's neither here nor there, because if it's an inadvertent whistle, then and it's a goaltend and it's an inadvertent whistle, then you stop play. But if they then they went and reviewed it, and they reviewed it for a goaltend.
Right.
So either you can't review it because it's an inadvertent whistle, or you review it and it's a goaltend.
Right.
Right. And if it's a goaltend, the play stops right there.
Right.
Unless there's something I don't know. Right. And that's always possible. But I've never seen anything like that.
So first off, he's mad about that. Never seen anything like it.
Never. Always a good ender. I've never seen anything like that.
But there's more.
Oh, dear.
There is more, Mark Cuban.
Is this going to get him fined, whatever he's about to say? I feel like it's totally about to happen, but I feel like is he about to do something that's going to get him fined for sure?
Oh, yes.
Okay, great.
The officiating is ridiculous.
No, it was ridiculous. And it's gotten worse. That's why I tweeted. I mean, I've gone a year and a half without commenting on the officials or more, and it's just gotten progressively worse. You know, and it goes back, you know, like I just tweeted, you've got Ronnie Nunn, who hired all the same people, who only hired people from the Ohio Valley Conference or whatever his buddies worked at, including a former Rucker Reed League ref who lasted a year. And so we're paying the price that his hiring and training was so bad that we don't have any new refs. And then we went to Don Baden, who was here 2 or 3 years. Then you went to Bob Delaney, who wanted you to go and take these vitamins and go to these brain doctors and kind of force the refs to try to do that and like to hire former refs. So we have lots of brothers, not former refs, former cops, police officers. And so out of a million refs around the world, we have this incestuous group of refs that we've hired. Literally brothers, spouses. I don't know which came first, the hiring or the spousing. But, you know, same high school, you know, same cities. And then when it comes to training, we sign Joey and Bennett and Wunderlich, all these guys who are former refs who go around and, according to refs I talk to, spend minimal time doing video time with them, video training, and just, you know, pop in, pop out. But that's not even really the problem.
Oh, my God. He said so many things to get fined there.
Yeah, he started saying that they were incestual based on
that part was
people
weird.
To get hired.
I also want to know more about the brain water that you need
the
to
vitamins.
Drink. Yeah, I just, is that a TB12 thing that he's selling?
I think it's smart water.
Yeah, I want, that makes sense. Uh-huh. I want to know more about that.
But Kevin and Mike, there is more.
Why? What else did he have to say?
Well, he kept going.
It was about their training, Kevin.
Oh, dear.
Because we've had such poor training, when some of the older refs retire, the ones that come and take their place are not ready. And why are they not ready? Because we had one guy running all the G League training, George Tolliver, and very little support. So by the time they get here, if they're not good enough already, you ain't all of a sudden going to make them better. And I've said that to the league a dozen times. They said they're going to work on it, they're going to work on it, they're going to work on it, we're improving it. Yet, instead of having people who know how to train and develop refs, you know, that are professional trainers, that learn from refs on mechanics and everything and what they want, we get Joey Crawford who gets dressed up. We get Bennett Salvador who likes to dress up. Let's see if they go to Maine Red Claws and spend all the time there where they should be. And that's what I've been saying. If these guys are such good training refs, send them down to the G League and let them spend time with the refs before they get here, not after they get here, because the time they get here, we're paying the price because they're getting on-the-job training that wins and loses games. And I'm not saying it's all against the Mavs. It's just, in general, this is a training issue. This is a management issue. Is it as bad as back in Dairy Queen? It literally could be worse, you know, because at least they had Ronnie Garretson refs. The guys that Ronnie trained, when you look at their...
Daryl Garretson is dead.
When you look at their longevity and you look at the guys that made it to the finals, whatever Daryl Garretson was doing to training was the right way to do it. Since then, I mean, literally Ronnie Nunn would hire people who worked for his former coach. He hired a guy who used a fake name, right, without checking. Rashawn Michel or whatever, who's gone to jail for fraud. You know, just the ridiculous stuff that we've done and just repeat over and over and over. The league doesn't care who wins or loses games, and that's the way it should be. But the definition of insanity, so you have Ronnie Nunn in the last 12 years, Ronnie Nunn, sorry I lost my voice, Don Vaden, Bob Delaney, and now Monty McCutcheon, all doing the exact same shit. Exactly.
There you go. That's
you think he swore to make up for the loss of his voice?
Yeah, oh yeah.
He was very mad at that loss.
Also, what an amazing use of the maybe not a word longevity instead of longevity.
Uh-huh.
That was interesting, but my God, I thought he was already going to get fined, over under fine of $500,000.
I think that's dead on.
I think that's
on.
A good number.
That's exactly the number. And you know what? I think he's fine with it.
He did give us a lot of insight. I mean, that's a lot of insight on how the refs are trained and how that they've been poorly trained over the last years and why maybe we're seeing a lot of missed calls in the NBA. He did put this in for just a second. It's not just the Mavericks. Obviously, Damian Lillard had a major goaltending not called the other day against the Utah Jazz, which would have tied the game up with seconds to go. And the replay system is totally screwed up in the NBA. And I will say this, watching a lot of games in the NBA this year, I haven't gone, boy, the refs are just at an all-time low. There have been bad calls throughout the history of the NBA that sometimes go your way, sometimes don't go your way. Obviously, it didn't go our way with 9 seconds to go on the block shot. It would have given the Mavs a chance to possibly tie the game if they reverse it. I don't know how we win the tip with no center on the team at that point.
Yeah.
But I would say this. I understand Mark's complaints. It was a horrible call and a horrible decision on the replay. But your team once again gave away a lead with under 5 minutes to go where they played their worst basketball. It stunk that you didn't have Willie Cauley-Stein. I know this goes into more of the game. The Mavericks already beat Atlanta and blew them out without Luka and without Porzingis at home. I had tickets to that game. It kind of stunk because they didn't play in the game. Willie Cauley-Stein had a pretty big impact in that game, being a bigger guy in that game, protecting the rim, getting a lot of alley-oops. And so they didn't have him, didn't have Porzingis. Struggled down the stretch. But, man, out of that, I understand what Mark Cuban's doing. But, once again, to me the loss was on your team not being able to do doodly squat, can't play defense at all late in the game, can't play offense late in the game. And I get Luka and Porzingis weren't out there. But, to me, the major issue is you stunk it up again late in the game, not the refs blew the game for you.
I do wonder, because Mark Cuban did this a lot early in Dirk's career.
Is it, let me ask you real quick along those lines, is it weird or comforting to hear him go off on the officials again? Because I'm with you, man. I remember when this was like an all the time thing. I remember him working at the Dairy Queen because of that. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he'll have to go back because he just kind of threw them under the bus again. He goes, they're even worse than Dairy Queen. So like,
he was saying it was worse than those times. Oh,
okay.
Kevin.
I thought he was saying it was even worse than Dairy Queen back in the day. Okay, I gotcha.
And I think, you know, from the 469, at least he got his money's worth, because that fine's gonna be big, and it was his money's worth because he went in on everybody there. But Kevin, you say, is it comforting? No, because at one point, remember, Dirk had to ask Mark Cuban to stop.
Right.
He had to say, hey, can you just take a step, just one step back,
right,
turn it down just a little bit, because I feel like because you guys keep calling out the referees, they're holding it against us. Because,
shout out Dirk.
Yeah, because you keep going in on them, they end up, the only way they can get their say is by calling fake fouls on us, not giving us calls we deserve. So I feel, I see what you're saying, Kevin, but no. I don't know. It doesn't scare them into doing better with the job. He even said the NBA is saying, hey, we're trying, but nothing's changing.
All right. Let's say he gets fined $500,000.
Chump change.
Exactly. But do you know how much chump change it is? Let's say the average human, and I know for some people they'll be like, what the hell are you talking about? Let's say the average human in America has a net worth of $50,000. Compared to Mark Cuban, that would be like you getting fined by your job $5.81.
Yeah.
If he gets fined $500,000.
And he's like, hold on, $5 to bitch and moan about the referees? Done.
Yeah.
He can make that back so much. What do you think it would be faster, Kevin? Him making that money back? Or this building falling over here.
Him making that money back for sure. And just to put it in even further perspective, going off of those same parameters, if he got fined $10 million, that'd be like you getting fined $116. Not that you wouldn't be like,
that's
oh,
tough.
That sucks.
That's tough.
But yeah, that's what it is. $10 million.
When you guys are watching the NBA this year, do you feel like officiating is at an all-time low?
Not necessarily. I feel like it's like par low for the course, but I don't feel like it's gotten worse.
There are embarrassing things that happen, and they shouldn't, because you were able to review it. You can review things and still get it wrong. That's where the problem is for me, Mike. All right, so I also wanted to throw this, because we just heard Mark Cuban rant, right? Wisconsin Herd coach Chase Buford is R.C. Buford's son. You know who R.C. Buford is? Yeah. He coaches the Wisconsin Herd in the G League, and his team had a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Oh, dear.
And lost their game.
Oh, no.
Listen to Chase Buford after this game.
The officiating definitely went right for Grand Rapids. That was as unprofessional as an officiating performance. And I hope you tweet this out in Tiger League, because that was embarrassing. Matt Rafferty is a That being said, we have to be so much better at the end of games. We can't blow a 21-point lead with 12 minutes to go. However bad and biased and unfair and illegal and cheating the referees are, we have to be better closing games. And so that's the way I feel.
He went
oh,
in
my
him.
God.
He said, listen, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We have to be much better. We can't blow a 21-point lead.
I don't think,
however bad and biased and unfair and illegal and cheating the referees are.
I don't think you can say the words that he said and then go, but still, we have to get better. Like, you could choose. Either I think the officiating are these specific words, or I think the officiating was poor and we need to do better. I don't think you can go that next level and say, so you need to work on that.
Those people are a bunch of this, and then be like, but we have to be better at the stuff that we do also.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I might need to listen to the uncensored strong version of that, but that was kind of terrifying. And as the
who got their fines worth there more, Cuban or him?
Well, Cuban has so much more money.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what the G League fine schedule is like. It feels like that was a $2,000 fine.
I feel
there.
Like he's not coaching the next couple games.
Okay.
Or Cuban, I don't know.
Would they suspend Cuban? Because he he burned that thing to the ground.
Well, I know this is tough because everything is videoed for the most part now. Is if I was a ref and Cuban just said that, and tonight I'm reffing the Mavs game, I'd make a bad call and say, hey, how bad was that one? You think I can do worse? Now, that's old school. Wow. That's old school officiating. That's old school umpiring. Like when somebody is calling out your teammates, your crew, and you're like, okay, that's fine. You know, you hear it all the time. Oh. In fact, you'd hear it from umpires that are like, yeah, I don't like that person. So, yeah, if it's 3 inches off the plate, it's a strike. I don't like him. And if he complains, I'm going to make it even worse.
Wow.
But I don't think you can do that anymore. Because you'd be caught on video and stuff like that.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it is time for Baseball Nuggets.
Oh, no, it isn't. No, just kidding.
Oh, my God.
Why spring training numbers are tough to understand. And, well, we lost another pitcher for the year. Next. Oh.
Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. Oh, by the way, Kevin, that team, the Wisconsin Herd, their NBA team, they feed into the Milwaukee Bucks, who became the fastest team to solidify a playoff spot and earn a playoff berth. They have done it in 56 games, where the Warriors had done it in 58 games. The Bucks are now the fastest to earn a playoff spot.
Bucks are still on pace to win 70 games.
You know, there's going to be a team in the Eastern Conference that probably goes 36-46 and makes the 8th seed. Like, it's amazing to me that
Orlando
ever since Jordan left the Chicago Bulls, it's been this long. That the Eastern Conference is by far the weaker conference. And now we're running from 1999 to 2020. I mean, there's years where the Western Conference, if you don't win 50, you're not making the playoffs. And consistently in the Eastern Conference, the last seed is pretty much always under 500. And sometimes the 7 seed is under 500.
That is all true. And the 7 seed would be under 500 right now. I would just say this top 6 in the East are as good as the top 6 in the West.
I think it's maybe catching up. 25 years later, since Jordan won his last championship, the Eastern Conference might be getting close to the same competition as the Western Conference. I've always said that Dirk Nowitzki and Steve Nash, and I know Nash left, Dirk probably would have gone to 5 to 7 NBA finals if the Dallas Mavericks, right? The Dallas Cowboys are in the Eastern Division in the East when it comes to football. I know I've said that wrong 3 times now, but just think of that. Like Dirk, he had the Spurs and the Lakers were making it every time. He would have crushed those Nets teams and the Philadelphia 76ers with Allen Iverson. I mean, there are so many bad teams that made it to the NBA Finals that Dirk's Dallas Maverick team were much better than, and they didn't even really at times come close to making the NBA Finals.
What do you think happens first? The East catches up or this building gets knocked down?
East.
Oh, I just wow.
saw. I just I, saw, I'm now convinced that that's never coming down.
I just saw a video.
I think it needs to stay.
They've stopped doing work on it.
They
again.
Quit.
I saw a video from Building our one. Own Austin York at 1080, and he goes, "We're gonna be here for a while." It looks ridiculous. Yep. It looks like me tapping this pen against a water bottle, like without any real force behind it. It looks absurd.
It's like if I leaned against a door and said, "I'm gonna knock this door down." That's pretty much all that's happening. All right, and Kevin, it is now time though. For the most important part of the day.
Oh.
Oh, thank you.
Baseball Nuggets.
Oh, do we change it?
Featuring Mike Bassett.
Thank you. See how I wasn't going to interrupt you?
See, you're learning. I'm proud of you,
Mike.
What
a pro.
Yeah, man.
All right, so spring training games have started. We covered the Astros earlier. They started as the home team against the Nationals, even though they share the same complex. People brought funny signs, and they were immediately confiscated. And you're not allowed to make fun of the Houston Astros at Astros home games. In spring training.
Yep.
Rangers start off spring training. They get rained out on Saturday, but here's a good sign. Joe Palumbo threw 2 innings, no hits, no runs, 2 strikeouts, and 2 walks. Now, he has had in his career somewhat walk issues, and look, it's his first outing. I wasn't going to take if he threw 1 inning and gave up 3 runs that, oh no, Joe Palumbo isn't good, but Joe Palumbo
still encouraging.
It's encouraging, and he put on 20 pounds, and it's not 20 bad pounds when you look at him. So he was a little bit of a thinner guy. He struggled last year. I think he had more blisters might have taken him out of some starts than his actual just physical status of like not being able to throw the 5 to 6 innings that a starting pitcher needs to throw in a game. Is he wanted to increase his strength and his stamina. So he wanted to put on good weight. He knew he needed to put on weight, but didn't want it to just be, I'm just going to go eat fast food as much as I can just to put on weight. So he has put on good weight, hopefully legally, and we don't have any type of...
What are you doing, Mike?
Well, I think it is always tough to put on 20 good pounds in 4 months. Don't you guys feel that way?
Good pounds,
not bad pounds.
Very easy to put on.
I mean, if you're focused and that's your... Like, what else was he doing? He was probably just working out all offseason.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, we saw it. Shippy saw it, too. We saw how hard Dutch worked this offseason. And, I mean, he was every morning training. And
he didn't come to my spin class, though, this offseason.
That's because that would have taken away the weight, Mike.
Yeah, and I think he was tired of getting his pitching tips from you on the radio.
I haven't given him pitching tips in years on the radio.
I would listen to it live that day you did, though.
Okay, so Joe Palumbo, great outing to start off. And then we have a versus, except now I have to take out one of the verses.
Yeah.
Because there were three lefties that I really wanted to concentrate in spring training, and I really wanted to see how their outings were going to go, because I think this is very important for now two of the guys. By the way, if you didn't hear the breaking news earlier, Brock Burke is out for the year.
Torn labrum,
which is not an easy thing to come back from.
Yeah.
This is one of those things where Brock Burke, it's probably like I'll give it a 70% chance that he actually comes back from this and is able to reach whatever potential that he had. We never got to see what it was going to be, but now he's got to miss this whole year. And then, Kevin, he's got to then kind of 2021 becomes a rehab year.
Okay, the whole year? Because I would always hear it was kind of like the, you know, 14 to 16 months. And so, okay, fair enough. And so that carries over. But I guess I shouldn't assume that 16 months means you're go ready. You're like,
it's just like now we got to rebuild up the arm strength, make sure everything's okay. So 2020, he's not in the major leagues. 2021, he's not in the major leagues. He's more kind of pitching at a minor league level, and you're really watching to make sure that you don't re-injure this thing. And then 2022, you're hoping he's back to where you're hoping he would be back.
That's what I hate about.
And by then, you're hopefully developed way more pitchers that Brock Burke is just like, sorry, man, these other guys developed while you were rehabbing, and you got to really prove something at this point because you're out of our picture.
That's what you hate about the pitching injuries, right? Is because you know, in one fell swoop, you could lose essentially two seasons. And that's what's so crushing. Like, usually if you hear, like, Chu's hurt or whatever, you're like, oh, he could miss a month. Or I know Gallo ended up missing half a year. But that's, you know, not the usual. If some of these serious pitching issues, what happens? 2 years. So basically you're telling me Brock Burke could be a, like, real, usable, viable part of this thing again in 2022.
Maybe.
If
everything goes well with rehab,
that is harsh.
If everything gets back to where it was, and then he can keep improving on where he ended the 2019 season. So that's tough. It takes him out of the picture. This probably helps out Taylor Hearn quite a bit. So now I can take out Brock Burke in the three lefties and put in Taylor Hearn. Taylor Hearn, though, to me, I'll keep saying this, because he got hurt so quick in the season. Remember, his start was on draft night. So draft night's coming up for the NFL in late April. I don't know the exact date, but Taylor Hearn's last kind of real competition was the NFL draft last year when he pitched against Seattle. I believe it was Seattle, and really struggled in that game. Didn't have a good game. Is he didn't barely pitch last year. So to build back his arm, I don't want him starting at all this year. I want him even in AAA relieving.
Okay.
And maybe they need to put him in Frisco. I don't know. But, I mean, wherever he is to start the season in the minor leagues, I want him because he is a big, tall lefty. And I know that you can't really just have lefty specialists on your team too much because of the new rule. They still will come into play quite a bit.
Batter minimum rule.
Okay. But with Taylor Hearn, he was a starter, so you feel like he has stuff to be able to get right-handers out. He hasn't been just developed to be kind of a lefty-on-lefty guy, but I got to watch his innings. I can't throw him 5 to 6 innings every 5 days in the minor leagues and expect for his arm to be strong and able to pitch in July and August. And if he's doing well, I want him pitching in September because a major league season is an extra month longer than a minor league season. So I got to watch his innings, and I can watch him by using him in the pen, I don't want to just throw him one inning or just to three batters. I do want to use him at times for two, even possibly three innings, and then give him 3 days off in the minor leagues. But I can't control his innings as much as a starter. Doesn't mean he's never going to be a starter, but I would just control his innings by making him a reliever this year. But what do I know?
No, I mean,
it seemed like a pretty well thought out conclusion that you reached right there.
Yeah, I don't know why you threw that in there.
I'm not so convinced.
Okay, Shippy's on the fence. If you've got more to convince him.
So Taylor Hearn, I can put in Brock Burke's spot in the verses, but I do think Taylor Hearn is more, for me at least, if I was running the Rangers, I would have him be competing as a reliever this season, not as a starting pitcher.
This season or as in spring training, what's he competing to do then?
For Hearn?
Yeah.
I wouldn't really have him competing for anything. I would be making sure that his arm's strong enough to start the season in the minor leagues.
I don't know if maybe this is something we get into in another Baseball Nuggets another day, or maybe when we go out in spring training, we'll be there
about it right now.
On Monday. I feel like it might be take a little longer. Wow. Is why... Because you said this earlier, why sometimes like what you do in spring training seems to matter for some and not for others. Maybe we can pick that up at some point.
Well, I can talk a little bit about it here for Palumbo and Colby Allard. Is there's a chance they make the team.
But there's no chance they'll be a starter if everyone else is healthy, right?
Right. And I don't want them actually making the team as a reliever, because it's always... People will always ask this question, and it's a good question. It's always tougher to go from reliever to starter in a season than it is from starter to reliever, because all of a sudden, if I'm training in spring training as a starter and they say, you know what, you did great as a starter, Palumbo, but all five of our guys are healthy. They're under contract. We believe in these five guys. We're going to put you in the bullpen. And then come mid-May, you're really lucky. Everybody's been healthy. And then in mid-May, you have an injury and you're like, man, who was our next best starter when we were competing here? And it was Palumbo was really our sixth best guy, but we moved him to the pen and he's been in the pen now for 6 or 7 weeks. All right, Joe, you're going back to the starting rotation. That's how we get people hurt.
Yeah.
That's the Rangers obviously have an issue with their pitchers getting hurt. And maybe I just need to follow other organizations more. Maybe it's not as bad, but it just seems to be really bad with the Rangers and getting their young guys hurt. Hans Kraus is a very fragile pitcher, huge prospect for the Rangers, but he's a guy that deals with a lot of injury issues. So one of the guys that you're depending on for about the 2022 season to really come on the scene and be a starting pitcher from 2022 to 2028, he's a guy that deals with a lot of injury issues.
Yep.
For Palumbo and Allard, I need to get to this point, and then we will move back to other topics, is it's important what they do in spring training, but yet it's always tough to tell what spring training means, because hitters are going up there without getting scouting reports on guys, what they do or don't do, what they do in situations and don't do in situations.
Okay.
So they're going up there, and they're like, hey, I have an idea of what this guy does, but I didn't sit there and watch a video on him for an hour on how he faces right-handed power hitters versus how he faces left-handed slap hitters and what he's trying to do. Same thing with the pitchers. They're going out there and they're like, look, I'm going to try to get these guys out. I'm not going to not try, but I'm not going to go to throwing 5 straight curveballs because this guy's a bad curveball hitter. I got to work on my stuff. I have 30 pitches in start one. I have 45 pitches in start two. I have 60 pitches in start three. And I got to be ready for opening day. And if I divert from that goal and just start trying to get these guys out, will I totally be prepared for the season? Or did I just impress in spring training when actually those guys are now going to scout me harder? So that's the tough thing about spring training. Okay. And last year, Odor was the best spring training player.
Yeah.
Didn't matter at all, because he's one of the best in spring training because guys aren't pitching to an Odor scouting report in spring training. They're throwing fastballs in fastball counts. They're not trying to elevate pitches a whole bunch to Rougned Odor. So that's where spring training numbers are tough to understand and say they're going to do good because of spring training, yet sometimes they really help you. Ronald Acuna Jr., not last year, but the year before, he was the best hitter in the Grapefruit League in Florida. He ended up being Rookie of the Year, and now he's MVP candidate. So sometimes you can get an idea in spring training, and sometimes those spring training numbers can fool you.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, is this a strategy or just a coach being a friendly fella. We'll talk about it next right here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.